Hi everyone, and welcome to episode number 2 of Talking with Founders, the show that is committed to uncovering how the very best startup founders think, operate, and build their companies. I'm Jonathan Millett, and in today's show, I'm joined by Bram Canstein, founder of the No Code MVP. Prior to starting the No Code MVP, Bram had built and sold 3 businesses, including Startup Stash, and in today's episode, we're going to be exploring Bram's philosophy and methodology for building and launching new products. From starting out with an idea to testing traction channels that work in acquiring those vital first customers, this episode provides us with a great practical view on how to successfully launch a minimal viable product fast. And before we start the show today, a word from our sponsors, Pelago. Pelago are on a mission to make educational content more affordable by offering it under a subscription model. To date, the platform has more than 300,000 titles from 2,500 publishers, including Wiley, Pearson, and Harvard University Press, to name a few. Visit pelago.com and start your 14-day free trial today. Hey, Bram, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, man. Thanks for inviting me. I'm happy to be here.
No, I've been a long admirer of yours on Twitter, and consuming all the content you put out there about no code and starting businesses. So I've been looking forward to this one. For those who don't know you yet, Bram, could you give us an introduction on your storied career to date?
I'll try to think of the short version. Yeah, my name is Bram Canstein. I'm from Amsterdam. I like to call myself an early stage startup expert and a non-technical internet entrepreneur. Maybe that's a good phrase for that. Maybe touch upon the early stage startup expert. I think I've been interested in trying out like new products and startups and services ever since I came online at like 12, 13, something like that. I was always on the computer when I was younger. And it's always intrigued me, like, what are people working on? Like, what's new? And I think just recently I figured out like what the thing is that I focus on. And I think it's the concept of time. Like, why is someone spending time on an idea? Even if when I see the idea, sometimes think, you know, does this have any merit? Is this any good idea? There's still someone working on it. And that really intrigues me. So that's where I like want to dig in and figure out why they are working on that idea. So there's something that I don't see, and I want to see what that is. And so over the years, I think I've tried out thousands of new products just to see what people are working on, how are those products built, etc. And next to that, really dove into, and I think we're going to talk about that, like lean startup methodology. How do you validate an idea? And I've started and ran several businesses, and I'm really self-aware of the fact that I'm not the guy who's running a business. So I don't like playing business. I like the first part, like creating something and setting something up. And so that's where the early stage startup focus comes from. So let's say the first 2 years of a startup or a startup idea, like what's the problem you're solving? Whose problem are you solving? What are you going to build to solve that problem? How are you going to market? And how do you get it to a point where you're, where you can confidently say, hey, this is something I'm actually going to pursue. I know who my customer is. I'm going to scale, et cetera. And then that's where my hands are off, because I have no clue how to really scale things. But getting to that point is something that I really enjoy helping people with. So that's what I focus on. And next to that, I try to build my own products and businesses while being a non-technical person, and to date I think it worked out well. There's still lots of ideas that I like to try, but yeah, I'm figuring it out along the way.
That's really cool. I like the label. I'm a non-technical
internet entrepreneur. Yeah, I mean, I that's also something like I don't know how that appeals to people, but it's just, I'm such a generalist in terms of internet stuff. Like, I like the business side, I like the product side, I do like the tech side, although I'm aware where I have to like shut my mouth and stop talking about certain technical subjects. And yeah, it's just my general interest. So I just know a lot about it. And So I try to put a label on myself just because other people ask that. Yeah. So I sometimes I phrase it like this, sometimes maybe a little bit different, but yeah, I think you get the gist of it.
Could you tell me about your first project? Like when you started, what you can remember about it, and I guess when you knew that you were onto a winner?
Oh, wow. Like first real products. So I know the basics of coding. Like I know HTML, CSS, bit of PHP, but I'm still calling myself non-technical because I don't have any clue how to like start an HTML page, for example. But I think one of my first projects, the very first was actually, I was downloading music from Napster, burning CDs, then selling those CDs in school. And then from the proceeds of that, we were like having parties. Like we would pay to give parties and then have the music there, etc. But like I was on a computer already, you know, trying to figure out like how do you, I had these like CD label stickers and like I had the printer and like stuff like that. And then from there, I think I stuck with the music team and I tried to build a lyrics website. Like I would always listen to Tupac and Biggie, and I thought it would be fun to create like a hip hop lyrics website, basically what Genius is right now. So you know that was an amazing idea 20 years ago, but yeah, that was interesting because I was just trying to, as like a 14-year-old or something, trying to figure out like how do you create a website, and I think I just dabbled in figuring it out. Like nothing came to fruition. Like I never created that actual website, but it was fun to like dive into, well, yeah, like I said, like trying to figure out how do you create a thing like that. So I think that was my first real like sting at trying to create a digital product, basically. And then later on, I think the real first thing that worked out was a product called Startup Stash, yeah, which I launched 5 years ago. And yeah, I don't know if you want to hear the long or the short story, but I think the short story is that was like a few, I want to say years in the making, just stuff that I was doing based on my interest. Like I was gathering all these different tools for startups that they could use. At the time I was working at an investor. So I thought, hey, if I bookmark all these things, I can, you know, send them out to the entrepreneurs I'm working with. And at one point I thought, totally different thought basically, but like, hey, I think I know how to create a product. Like I tried starting stuff before, but now it kind of all came together, like combining a natural interest, like all these tools and resources with, I think I figured this out, like how to go from an idea in my head to a first product, like where to find my audience, how to talk to them, etc. Like it kind of clicked there. And I combined that with not finding anything online that resembled anything that I was looking for in terms of like a resource website where you could find those tools. So I was like, yeah, like those three things combined eventually gave me like enough motivation to try out that idea. And so, yeah, again, short version, I really figured out like, who is this for? What are the channels? Where am I going to launch? And eventually I launched in the first 2 days. I don't even know the numbers anymore, but let's say 50,000 people or something visited it. Like it went pretty viral and it was super fun to see. Like my only goal was to prove to myself that I knew how to take something from my head, turn it into a product, launch it to the right people. And within 2 days, I already met that goal. And everything after that was super like bonus stuff that I encountered.
What were those, you know, you said you you stumbled across the right audience and then the right traction channels. Can you remember what those channels were that you were testing at the time that worked?
Yeah, I think early on, I really had the mindset, and I still have that mindset, that nobody cares about your idea. So you have an idea. An idea is just a combination of, well, what I just mentioned, interests, the right time, not finding something that fits into, well, your own problem, like my own problem in that case. Like it's a combination of different things. So I think An idea is something that can be changed, can be executed on in different ways. So to me, ideas are interesting, but they're basically worthless. Like, you have to do something with it to prove that it makes any sense. And so I think that's what I always kept in mind. Like, and I summarized that into nobody cares about your idea, but I really think you have to act like that. So just because you share your idea with someone, if you share your idea, it's basically a pitch. You're just telling a story, like, I'm going to create this or this or this, like, whatever. But if you tell a story plus show evidence, right, or gather evidence for yourself, then the story becomes much more tangible, or less just a story, basically. So I always had that in the back of my mind. I'm just a random guy. I have a random idea, and I have to find people that could probably, maybe somewhere, care about what I'm trying to create. And if you operate with that mindset, I think you're really open to going beyond what you think are the general channels or places where you could find people, or ways to cold email them. Basically anything that you're doing while you're figuring out where are the people that I want to reach, and if I understand where they are, how should I talk to them? And so I was focusing on startup entrepreneurs, maybe entrepreneurs in general, but I think startup entrepreneurs, like, they are on Product Hunt. That's where also where I launched. But I went into a lot of Reddit groups, Facebook groups, LinkedIn groups, and basically really trying to figure out, what are these people talking about? How do I, without really like pushing as some salesy person, like, how do I contribute to this channel, right? Like, for example, a Facebook group, so that I at one point can share, like, hey, this is what I've been working on. So I think that's also where, like, the launch success of that product came from, was not only creating a product that people enjoyed using or what they found value in it, but more importantly, really finding the distribution channels that worked. And I think this is an interesting question, because there's no like right answer. Like, this is my answer. And for every product, there are different channels, because, you know, they have different target audiences. They are targeting different behaviors, etc. And so maybe for some type of products, the right channel is, well, in COVID times, maybe not, but like offline events where people come together, like meetups in the city about a certain subject, right? Like, maybe you have to go there to talk to these people. And others are, well, obviously there's dozens of Facebook and Reddit groups, etc. But there's also dedicated, you know, fora online. I don't know, if you're creating something for horse lovers, you know, maybe there's a subreddit for horse lovers, but there's probably a dedicated like forum somewhere where you can interact with the right people. So it's really contingent on the idea. Like, it's contextual.
What do you do in that instance? So say the subreddit, you just go to them and say, hey, I've got this idea, I think you like it.
No, it's just following the conversations, replying, like, actually, like, you have to be genuinely interested in the people that you're trying to help, right? A famous quote is, you have to fall in love with the problem and not the solution, right? But falling in love with the problem also means that you have to enjoy talking to the people that are experiencing the problem, right? And if you are not that target group, I think you first have to understand, like, who are these people? Like, how do they communicate, etc.? Like, you have to, because if you communicate with them in like a totally different way than how they are talking to each other, you're going to stand out in like a negative way. You're like the infiltrator, you know? So I think also, you know, when you ask people like, hey, what do you think of my idea, or check out my website, or sign up, like, you're asking something from them. And I really think that before you ask something from other people, you have to first give something, because it's about you. Like, you want to get feedback and insights from them. So, they wake up in the morning not caring about your idea. So first you have to make that connection before you can extract value from a certain type of customer segment.
That makes a lot of sense. So when you've pushed out, and we'll talk about the no-code MVP shortly, but when an MVP is ready to start having these conversations and getting them out there in these communities for your audience, what metrics do you tend to set to measure whether something's successful or not, or at least going in the right direction? And do you time box that?
Yeah. So there's two separate things here. I think the you can measure different metrics, right? Like you can, let's say you create a landing page with an email sign up as your MVP, and you're seeding that in certain channels to see if you can capture people from those channels, so you can eventually build a relationship with them, like a starting relationship, right? Like showing them your prototype or having them as first customers or whatever. You can measure multiple metrics, let's say on that website, but also you can say, hey, let's say you target Reddit with Reddit ads, for example. You can measure the reach of the ad, like click-through rate, etc. Then you have your visitors on the website, conversion rate on a sign-up form, whatever. So you can measure multiple metrics. But I think you can always just pick one as your success, like the criteria for success, right? So eventually that's almost always about conversion, right? So if you create a landing page like that with a sign-up form, you could say, I want to have 100 signups, but like you're also saying, you have to time box that. So when you start out, you say, okay, I'm going to build a landing page. I'm going to see that on Reddit ads with this and this copy, which is basically your pitch, right? / value proposition to these people. This is how I'm going to talk to them. I want to drive traffic to my website, and I'm going to measure how many people convert. And my goal is 100, and I'm going to take 2 or 3 months, whatever the time box is, to get to that point. And the goal to make it as focused as that is so that after 2 months, you can have the honest conversation with yourself or your teammates, you know, whatever the founding team is, about what you actually did. And so I think the time box and giving yourself these constraints, and constraints are in the time, but the constraints are also in your MVP, because in your MVP, at least this is what I'm teaching other people, and I think is how you should approach an MVP. Your big idea, your perfect solution is for everyone in a certain customer segment. But tomorrow, you cannot reach all those people. So you have to zoom in on that customer segment and think, who can I reach? You know, who will have the find the most value in what I'm doing? So let's say your customer segment is families, right? You can then focus on single parent families, or families in suburbs, or families with more than one child, or whatever the segment is, but you focus on that, and that's where like who you built the MVP for, and like you're going to talk about the results just for that segment within a time box that you set, because only then you can make these little small steps towards your big idea. And if you start tomorrow with your big idea trying to capture everyone, you won't have results that you can like draw conclusions from, because it's too widespread. I hope that makes sense. Like that's how I view it. And the interesting part is that for a lot of people, this is really difficult, because they have their big idea, and talking about the big idea is the most fun thing to do, obviously, right? Like fantasize about how it's successful it's going to be for everyone and amazing, whatever. But if you start tomorrow really like zoned in on a specific customer segment or a segment of the segment, for a lot of people, that feels like a step back, because it's too small, it goes too slow, and all these things. But you have to take these baby steps before you can take the bigger steps towards where you want to go. Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense. I've seen so many. I think it's hard to really shrink that vision, like you say, isn't it? And
it's super hard. Really
doing, because yeah. How do you measure that big leap? You need to really shrink it.
And the funny thing is that this again goes back to the mindset part. If you really believe nobody cares about your idea, then you will also believe, this is the second thing I'm following, that nobody cares about your product. Like it just has to work, right? So if I find you in my channel, I talk to you, you're convinced that I understand your problem and I'm going to solve it with my solution. Let's say you sign up, try out my product, and it doesn't deliver, then I will lose you forever. You know, there's too much noise for you to even reconsider, rejoining me in my mission of solving your problem. And to make something that really works, like that actually delivers the value, like it takes so much, it takes a lot of focus, and it's pretty hard. And that's, again, I think an argument for making it as focused as possible. Because if you don't, like your efforts will be scattered Like that way you can really have an objective conversation about the progress that you're making, if any, of course.
So let's talk about the no-code MVP. Like, what is it? Who is it for? How did the idea come to be?
I think we already talked about this a bit. Like, this comes from my view on how you should approach your ideas. The course is called No-Code MVP. I think it's 70% about what we already talked about, like your mindset, the approach to going from big idea to a focused MVP, setting your metrics, setting your success criteria, so you can gather the evidence that will substantiate your idea and make it more than just a story. And I think 30% of that course is about doing that with no code tools. And so why I created that course is because there is content around that mindset and methodology part. I obviously think I approach it in a way that is, I think, understandable for people who want to start out and also think that because they're not technical, they have to find a technical person to help them with their idea. But what I was missing in all the other content that was out there was that practical part.
Yeah.
So doing it yourself, like I truly believe that you should do that first part yourself up until the point that your solution breaks or you really think, hey, I should scale or I should create custom code to facilitate this product. And so that's kind of where that idea for no-code MVP came from.
If I were, or if there was a first time founder, brand new to this, and maybe they're thinking, right, like you said, I need to go out and find a technical co-founder to prove this idea that I have, and again, build this big vision. What advice would you give to them?
That's a good question. I think the first thing is, why would someone technical join you?
Yeah.
If you just have a story, right? So again, you want something from another person because you are not able to do something that you want to do. So why would they join your mission? And then again, if you go back to nobody cares about your idea, you know, you cannot just pitch them an idea. So you have to have supporting evidence that gives you more certainty around an idea. And that's when I think someone will just consider maybe joining you. But the fun thing here is that if you are able to gather that evidence, you can take it further than just gathering the evidence with the no-code tools, right? Like you can start a online service business without code. Like you can start a marketplace without code. You can start an on-demand service without code. You know, you can start a productized service without code. So, and there's a famous quote by Paul Graham of Y Combinator, and he says, you know, doing that first validation by yourself, or founding team, or you as a single founder, is a company defining exercise. Because if you do that part yourself and you get to the point where you're certain that this is a good idea, this can be a business, and what I have built up until now will break if I scale to more people, you have more control of what that technical product eventually will look like. Because if at that point you're talking to a technical person, you can show them, hey, this is what I did up until now. These are the people that are paying. So this is the promise of a potential business. And then if that person asks, so, okay, what should I build? Then you already exactly know what they should build because you already created all these processes and you know, flows, etc. So you know how that product should eventually work. And I think realizing that will be a real eye opener to non-technical people that aspire to be entrepreneurs and working on their idea. Because if you can do that first part yourself, you can also cycle through ideas much faster. So you can filter out the bad ideas faster and get to an idea that actually works also faster. Yeah, so I think that's what I would share with them.
What do you think about the no-code space in general? Are there any gaps that you think will be filled with new products in the coming months or years?
I think, you know, the combination of website builders, automation, database tools is basically everything you need. I mean, you know, there's design tools, etc. But I think there's already enough in this space. But what I'm watching is the interesting conversation about, you know, people asking like, hey, how big can you scale this, etc. Like, yeah. I'm not really interested in those conversations, because I think, you know, can you scale this is, you know, my answer is always, you know, let's talk again when you get to a point where, when you need to scale, right? Like getting to that point where you have the quote unquote luxury problem that you, what you created with no code breaks is already so tough, you know, and why would it be necessary to then continue with a more scalable no code solution? Because you can also build custom code that's perfect for your context. So for me, it's not really a code versus no code discussion. I think you're doing extremely well if you can get to a point where your no-code solution breaks. Means you've done an amazing job. So to me, like, I really view the no-code tools really, well, maybe for the stage that I'm focusing on, first 2 years, so from prototyping to MVP to the first basic product that you can, yeah, take to the point where hopefully it breaks, and then, you know, you move on to a custom solution that serves your individual business and context. Yeah. So I think there's already enough tools, but you know, as a someone who's interested in new tools every day, I don't mind that new tools will pop up. So that's, yeah, I'm interested to see where it's going to go.
And a final question before we go into a quick fire round. So you've exited, is it three businesses now?
Yep.
What did that process look like? Because you're an early stage guy, like you're a creator, and do people approach you? Is it just by the networks that you swim in? How did it happen?
First one was, I was on a call with someone I met through someone else I met on the internet, basically. And we were, and this was Startup Stash, and he asked me like, hey, how's it going? And I told him, yeah, it's going fine. Like, I was running it as a side business, like between $3,000 and $5,000 a month. But like I told him, you know, it's going fine, but maybe I want to sell it because I have other ideas that I want to pursue, etc. And so then he asked me like, hey, what's your number? And I told him a number, and he said, okay. And then I was like, okay. So that's basically how it went. Like, no real like hard work in that or something. Like, it was pure, I don't know, internet magic or something like that. The other one was a newsletter publication that I grew to like 11,000 subscribers. That's, I did put that up for sale, I think, on Twitter and maybe another website, like now it's called, it was called like 1K Projects before or something like that. So yeah, that was just through my network. And the last one, which was a few weeks ago, started out as a side project for my course, ended up having like 25,000 people using it in a few months, and it got on the radar of a Silicon Valley VC who were trying to build out like their content strategy. And this was a website where you could find like content in different stages for startups. So yeah, they thought, okay, why would we build this ourselves? Maybe this is something for us. So yeah, that's kind of, yeah, again, I want to say magic of the internet, man. I love, and maybe this is a something, a good advice to end with, like, anyone who's thinking about, I want to create something, but I'm not sure if my idea is right. And like all these insecurities that everyone has around having ideas and putting yourself out there, like, just do it. It sounds so simple, but you have to do it. Even, you know, let's say you launch something and only 500 people see it, and you think it's a failure. Like, it's just 500 people in the whole world. So like, who are these 500 people? It doesn't matter. And you will always learn one, two, or three things from a failed project that will like eventually compound into something that will work out. And on the other side, sometimes you launch something and more people than you would ever expected find value in it. And yeah, you can only, you know, meet other people and learn when you put your creations out there. So don't hold back. Like, you have to launch and show other people.
Absolutely. There's so much learnings, even in the projects that don't work out. Yeah. So let's finish with this quick fire round. What are you learning or enjoying learning about right now, Bram?
Oh, man. I also just started a podcast. And so I'm designing like the cover art in Sketch. I'm designing the background images for the YouTube video. So I'm like learning Sketch more. I'm also playing around with Framer, just to build like prototypes. So I think I'm really focused on becoming a bit better at the design aspect of things. And for example, I don't know what you're doing with this podcast, but I found an editor who's going to edit the podcast, because it was also on my list of things to learn. Like, I know how to edit videos, and I think it would be fun to learn about editing podcasts, but I just decided, okay, I'm focusing on the design part, and I'm going to just find someone who's,
yeah,
much better at this than me.
That's on my like to-do list. I'm editing myself at the moment. It's so time consuming. So yeah, you're doing the right thing there.
Yeah, no, but I've also, it's time consuming. Like, I edited 42 videos, 5.5 hours of video for my course all by myself. I know how tiring editing is, but it's still, you know, you learn something from it. Yes. So right, like my 30th video was way better than my, you know, first five videos. Eventually, for example, I went back to the first five and re-edited them, just because I knew how to edit better than when I started. So I think, you know, if you make the conscious choice about this is what I want to learn, then, you know, of course it's not always fun, but you make the decision that you're learning something new.
What other startups or founders are you admiring right now?
I recently talked to one of the guys of Mailbrew.com. His name is Francesco. I'm not sure about his last name. He's Italian. He's working on this together with a friend, and I think their approach to, you know, they're technical guys, but their approach to, well, also what we talked about, I think, is really, really nice. Like, they're super conscious about their skills, what aren't their skills, and what they should focus on. And so I think they're really interesting. So you have to check them out, mailbrew.com.
Mailbrew.com. Yeah. If you wasn't working on no-code MVP, what else would you be building right now? What other ideas are percolating?
I'm investigating a Twitter tool to build a tool for Twitter users to have more reach on tweets. So that's with one friend, a developer friend, by the way. And another, he's in the Netherlands, and another development friend in LA. Yeah, we're just bouncing off ideas. We're trying to figure out, like, what are businesses that we can build that do, I want to say, like, 25K a month.
Yeah.
So that you can both take away 10K and then have 5K for expenses. Like, those are in general like the sizes of businesses that I'm now thinking about. Like, I want to create multiple digital assets that make money. So the course is one, obviously. And so I'm trying to figure out, like, how can you do that? So that's my first step at that. So small, but like narrow, but valuable tools that go pretty deep into services or like behavior and you know, company processes, etc.
I love that idea of like a lattice of these digital assets. Certainly more hedged than just going for broke with one startup over 10 years.
Yeah, so I don't know what the downside there is. Obviously focus, so you really have to think about, you know, how many of these assets can I create. But yeah, let's figure that out, how what the number is there.
Yeah. You may have answered this already with Mailbrew, but who else would you like to hear on this show?
Good question, man. I've had some fun guests already. I think the guys from Mailbrew are cool. Yeah. Oh man. I don't know, check who I follow on Twitter. I don't know. I'm also not really good with names, by the way. So it's a fun question, but I don't have an answer. I'm sorry.
No worries. Where can people learn more about you and No Code MVP, Bram?
Basically, I'm super active on Twitter. So that's where you can find me. I'm at Bram K. So that's B-R-A-M-K. And people can check out the course and sign up to get some previews at nocodemvp.com.
I'll leave all the details in the description, but thank you so much for your time today. It's a pleasure. It's been something I've been looking forward to for a while. So really appreciate it and look forward to seeing what creations you bring to life next.
Yeah, thanks, man. I enjoyed our conversation and good luck with the podcast.
Thanks so much. Likewise. Take care.
Bye. Cheers.
So a massive thank you to Bram for joining me on the show today. And if you would like to learn more about Bram, you can find links to his Twitter handle and the No Code MVP's website in the description below. Also, if you would like to suggest speakers or themes for upcoming Talking with Founders shows, feel free to contact me directly. You can find me on Twitter at @Heya_Jonathan or sign up to our weekly newsletter at talkingwithfounders.com. The weekly newsletter features a transcribed summary of our podcast interviews for those of you in a hurry, shares some products that we've recently discovered, and much more. You've been listening to Talking with Founders. Until next time, take care.